The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, the Champions League. And Manchester City's scratchy win in Hoffenheim is the only victory for the greatest league in the world. As Manchester United draw a blank at Old Trafford, Liverpool lose in the last minute in Naples, and Spurs take Pochettino's advice and enjoy watching Messi at Wembley. Elsewhere, defeat for Real Madrid in the Championship. We'll ask, is it ever funny to throw a cabbage at someone? We'll look ahead to this week's fixtures and we'll answer some of your questions in today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We have a panel today, which is fortunate. Again, John Ashdown.
Hi.
After no performances in a year, back with increasing regularity.
I know, yeah. And looking at the schedule, it's two and done, basically.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't matter how well you perform
exactly.
Today.
I've got a...
You're never selected again.
Absolutely, this is a free hit.
This is like a sort of testimonial.
Absolutely,
the John Ashdown testimonial. Well, it's been great to have you on. It's always interesting. You know, when Arsene Wenger announced he was going before, does that mean that Barry and Paul McInnes, because they know that you're not on ever again, that will they raise their game, or will they keep performing, or will we all just be... You know.
We'll flip 180 degrees on our opinion on John Ashdown and stuff. And actually, he's very good at this podcasting.
Nick says, is Paul McInnes the voice that says, now the moment you've been waiting for before the trailers at the Odeon?
No, but I would like some voiceover work. I think it pays quite well.
Max is the guy to ask.
Yeah,
I'm the voice of Gaviscon. It's not life-changing.
But I mean, you can get a holiday out of it.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. Yeah. It's a good holiday. Whenever those twins do something different, then I'm happy about it. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
Hello.
You well?
I think there's a lurgy sweeping the sports department. I have a horrible feeling I've just been infected.
Okay. The injury problems, you know, is the squad deep enough for tomorrow's Guardian? Is Ron A... available, or is he, you know, horizontal, unable to write?
I think there's been a lot of absenteeism this week, so I did the work of three men yesterday.
What a hero. Should we start then?
Three very lazy men.
Should we start at Wembley? Spurs 2, Barcelona 4. It was a great game. I mean, with a bit more fortune, it could have been 3-3, and Spurs could have got a draw. With a little bit less fortune, it could have been 100-0 to Barcelona. Lionel Messi is brilliant. We all know he's brilliant, Barry, but when we're old, we'll talk about him. You know, when old people get misty-eyed about Jimmy Greaves, or certainly my dad gets misty-eyed about Greaves or Alan Gilzean or whatever, we will talk to youngsters, you know, just on park benches at bus stops who never saw Messi play in real time.
Well, you see, I never really saw Jimmy Greaves play, and when people tell me how good he was, I don't believe them. And it worries me that when I'm old and boring the arse off some young whippersnapper telling him how good Lionel Messi was, that he won't believe me, you know, and that is a source of worry. I mean, we all know he's good. I think maybe this particular performance is getting a load of attention because it was against an English club, in much the same way as Zlatan Ibrahimovic used to get criticised for not performing against English clubs. I think Messi's brilliant performances, you know, which aren't exactly rare, tend to be exalted to a higher plane when they're against English clubs, possibly because more English people see them. But, you know, he has in the past scored 5 against Bayer Leverkusen, 4 against Arsenal in the Champions League. He's played really well in 2 Champions League finals. But last night, he just ran the game, dictated the tempo, scored 2, set up 2, hit the post twice in quick succession. His pass for the first goal...
It's just incredible.
Barney wrote about it very well, as he invariably does. But it's like... He said it was like Messi just took a snapshot, and even though the players in front of him were moving, it was as if they stood still in his mind, and he just threaded the ball through this really narrow corridor to Alba to Coutinho, and yeah, scored. But yeah, it was everyone saying Messi masterclass, and it was.
Martin says, is Leo Messi still underrated, even as he's being lauded as the world's best? John, what do you reckon?
I think if you put him on a pedestal up with Pele and Maradona, it's hard to be underrated, isn't it? I think my favourite bit from last night was the weirdly was the last the final goal, the fourth goal. Just, I mean, we all support teams who have had strikers that have been in those sort of situations, and you have zero expectation of them score, finding the target, banging it over the bar or straight at the keeper. But the way he just completely and utterly sold Lloris the wrong way, that half the camera shots you can't even see Lloris because he's dived so far the wrong way, was just brilliant.
Actually, just brief time out here. So yeah, you say we all support teams who strikers who would not do that. The one that springs to mind from my team is Danny Dicchio. Who's yours at Sheffield United?
Oh, you can name any one of several hundred, I would think.
Oh, at Cambridge, it's either Trevor Benjamin, who really only scored goals by chasing down the keeper and then twatting the ball into him and then going in, or Devon White, who has gone down in Cambridge history as we gave Bristol Rovers our greatest ever goal scorer, John Taylor, and £100,000 for Devon White. It was truly awful.
And however hard you try, none of you can beat Ricky Van Wolfswinkle.
So. Do you know what? I'd take him at Cambridge right now, to be honest.
Can I just say that, you know, the aspect of the game that I really loved watching of Messi was, well, there's two of them, but they were connected, was just to see where he sort of is on the pitch when he receives the ball. Like, it's all over the place. And obviously the team allows him to do that. And there was another lovely bit of deference for his first goal, the third goal, where two people step over it in order to let I think it's Coutinho and then Suarez dummy it, but knowing full well that Messi's going to come and tuck it away. But it's all built around Messi. But he picks up these spaces, and then the passing that was coming from it, I mean, it was quarterback style passing a lot of the time, left foot out to elbow a lot on the left-hand side. And you're like, yeah, I knew he could pass, I knew he could do that, but to see him just almost play a completely different position for half of the game, it was just wonderful.
Yeah, there are those moments with Messi where he plays the pass to someone and all that player does is just stop the ball, and then Messi runs on and picks it up again. I remember interviewing, I think it was Willy Sagnol, about Zidane, and he was sort of saying, look, it was just it's a different game for him. When you appreciate the other people on this pitch are really good at football, you know, these are the world's best footballers, and and he is on a different level to them. It's ridiculous.
Speaking of Zidane, quickly, that Rakitic finish was quite Zidane-esque, wasn't it?
Mark says, does Barry think Rakitic shinned that one too?
No, I don't.
What a goal. Unbelievable. Do you know, the thing that almost made it... look, Spurs are my big team of winnings, but I still found it funny, was the fact that all the Spurs fans sort of jeered when... Was it Suarez mishit that volley? And they all went, "Hey, oh," like that. What an amazing strike that was.
And a brilliant assist from Philippe Coutinho from the byline, you know, picking him out. And yeah, just a wonderful strike. Because quite a lot of the Barcelona players played very well. You know, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez, I thought, had an outstanding game.
Artur looks like a great player as well, doesn't he?
But... their performances have been completely overshadowed, you know, by Mr. Messi. But they, you know, I think Suarez had two dummies to tee up Messi, and they seem quite happy to play in his service, and it's quite nice to see.
Does he get fantasy football points for assists? Because he should. I mean, not that I care about that game, but really, they were the both dummies were just absolutely superb. Any positives for Spurs, John? I thought Kane looks like he's the Harry Kane that I said had disappeared 2 weeks ago. Lamella played well, and Harry Winks, although, you know, it's tough in that midfield, he still looks like he could potentially solve the England problem, or
yeah, potentially
one of them.
Potentially. I mean, the good news for Spurs was that they were competitive for the most part. I mean, they were unlucky in a sense that, you know, Lloris doesn't have a brain freeze every week for the first goal, and Rakitic doesn't score a worldie every single week, and okay, Messi's pretty much unplayable most of the time. But as you say, it could have been 3-3 with a slight twist here and there. Yeah, but clearly they're not on Barca's level.
I mean, I think I only saw the first half live because I was playing during the second half, but I thought they lost that contest when it was a lot of pressing and counter-pressing, a lot of congested space in the middle of the park. Barcelona had the better of them. And obviously, you know, the game changes when you the attitude changes it when it's 2-0 at half time away from home. I think if Spurs go out of the Champions League, which, you know, looks a possibility given the Inter result, that's probably quite good for them this season, unfortunately for them, because they don't have the squad to compete with injuries. I think it was 5 players missing last night. Wanyama makes his second start of the season. I think he only played 24 times last year. He's not really, can't really slot into that team. They had to rearrange the entire side, so they were playing like 2 men up front sometimes and neither of them were Kane. It was a very different formation to try and make the best of the resources. And they gave it a go. And I think one thing you can always say about Pochettino, Spurs, full of spirit, will always fight and won't give up. But there were limitations there, and I think that's going to happen over the course of the season.
And with so many key players out, you know, which needs to be highlighted, they did look a bit light on the bench.
Is Lloris good? Like, I mean, I think he is good, but he does make quite big errors.
I didn't think he had a particularly good season last season, but
he did something in the summer that I can't. What was it again? Well, lifted the World Cup.
He did lift the World Cup. I understand that. I mean, and he's.
Got nicked for a drink driving.
You know, he did lift the World Cup, but he made a big ricket in that World Cup final. And there are sort of occasional big games where Lloris sort of does something a bit silly and then just looks a bit Gallic about it afterwards. Matt says, do you think Sissoko's shot has passed the sun yet? I like that question. Yeah, as you say, Paul, Spurs in real danger of going out of the group stages after Inter's 2-1 win at PSV. PSV went 1-1. Pablo Rosario scored a cracker. Inter's keeper Handanovic was only given a yellow card for handball outside the box. It's one of those laws where I think I don't understand it, because I think he probably should have been sent off.
I think so, yeah. He sort of slides out on the right-hand side and stops the ball with his hand. Hmm. It's usually an automatic red card, I would have thought, but I don't know.
So Nangolan made it 1-1. Icardi got Inter's winner. Spurs now play PSV twice and then Inter. So they could feasibly be in a reasonably strong position when they go to the new camp. Let's move on to Liverpool. Napoli 1, Liverpool 0. Klopp says, I prefer losing a bad game to losing a good game. Liverpool didn't get a shot on target. First time in the Champions League since February 2006. Barry, what did you make of it?
I thought it was uncharacteristically poor from Liverpool. Seems widely accepted it was their worst performance of the season. Greg Bukowski was, I wouldn't say moaning downstairs earlier because that's not really his style, but he pointed out that Liverpool had 3 up front, were getting overrun in midfield throughout, and he thought they should have taken off one of the front 3, probably Salah because he had another quiet game, and thrown Fabinho in midfield instead, but they didn't. And I think it's difficult to read too much into it because it was just a really bad day at the office for them, and they have been not brilliant throughout the early stages of the season so far, but they have been very good and even getting results when playing badly, not badly, but not at their maximum ability. And last night they weren't anywhere near the maximum. They were just bad. It was a bad day for them.
I mean, it's dangerous, John, isn't it, that you, after every sort of set of European results, you re-evaluate for no reason at all whether the Premier League's good or it isn't good, you know. And you look at these results and you look at, you know, Hoffenheim pushing City and Napoli beating Liverpool, and then realise a little bit that we get, well, certainly I get a little bit carried away with how good, say, Liverpool are.
Yeah, perhaps. And you do wonder sometimes when you get these weeks where only one team wins that, you know, does the relentlessness of the Premier League end up knackering everybody, and the way that the sort of the fixtures are structured. Is it Spurs who've got to play 4 times in 9 days in the next couple of weeks? So, yeah. But Liverpool, yeah, I think they can just put it down to a bad day at the office. Although they were a little bit lucky at the weekend against Chelsea and got away with it slightly there as well, which I guess 2 in a week bodes slightly badly for the
crisis.
Weekend. Yeah.
And Napoli also, Ancelotti changed his formation, didn't he, to sort of take into, because Liverpool spanked Napoli in the pre-season and it was all hallelujah. And so he stuck a third centre-half in there, and I think that probably, you know, did end up with that front three not quite being able to cause havoc in the way that they would like to do.
Naby Keita was taken off early. There were fears about how injured or how if he was taken to hospital if he was ill, but he's okay. And he might be in contention for the City game, which we'll look ahead to in a bit. Andrew says, is Mo Salah the new Saido Berahino? Barry.
Oh, that's harsh. Very harsh.
Well, it was probably their first anniversary of the last time somebody said Mo Salah can't finish. Do you remember that? The beginning of last year, it was like, Mo Salah, great player, great pace, can't finish.
Yeah.
So
maybe it's happened to him. Napoli, is that Napoli's first kit? It must be their home kit. It looks like...
I really hope not.
It's like a cycling kit. It looks like somebody's just gone out for, you know, to do 20 miles and on Dunstable Downs. It was a really ugly football kit. Anyway, also in that group, PSG 6, Red Star 1. I mean, this was a total procession. I actually switched over to Hollyoaks. And not that I ever watch Hollyoaks. I was just like, this is just, there's no point in this football match.
Yeah. I think it was 4-0 when I stopped watching. Yeah.
I was going to Channel 4 News. It just happened, you know, that's just like to justify. I mean, it was very entertaining.
Red Hollyoaks. Star assuming the ceremonial Celtic position.
I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting too much from Red Star. It's the first time back in European competition in 30 years or little under 30 years. They're not a wealthy club. They don't have they don't get very big attendances. I wrote an article about them a few weeks ago, and I was stunned to see their average gate is like only about 5,000 or 6,000. I thought it'd be a hell of a lot more. But they are previous winners of the tournament, you know, so it's good to have them back. They got a good result in their opening game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Napoli lead that group on 4. Liverpool and PSG have 3. Red Star are on 1. Owen asks, how much do I have to bribe you to not remind me of another woeful Manchester United performance? John, did you enjoy this football match?
How much does he have to bribe me?
Yeah.
A couple of hundred would do it, I would think.
Do you reckon?
Actually, no, much lower than that. Much lower.
Gaviscon money.
I mean, yeah. I think if someone came in with just a really nice bacon sandwich for each of us, we could move straight on to the City game. But since no one's doing that, look, Jose's gone 4 consecutive home games in all competitions without a win for the first time in his career. Paul Scholes is pretty damning about Jose on BT Sport. He's embarrassing the club. His mouth is out of control. I'm surprised he survived.
And that was before the game as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they were the kickoff was delayed because of traffic. And Jose said it was because the police didn't give them an escort, but the police said, well, we don't give teams escorts unless we need to give them escorts. And there are some stories about some rant in the hotel before the game that was meant to be 20 minutes but turned into 3/4 of an hour from Jose at the players about how they'd done the previous week, which doesn't seem like the best time to do it. I don't know what more can we say, Barry?
Well I was thinking yesterday, it's kind of getting boring pointing out Mourinho's flaws, and I was trying to think, are there any arguments you can make to support him, you know, if you wanted to be a Mourinho apologist? And I came up with a few, but none of them are very convincing. And
well, try your best.
I'm just being devil's advocate here, because I'm obviously not a fan of his work and never have been particularly, but he's not being supported by the club in the transfer market or over the Paul Pogba situation. I think you can say that's a given. He could not possibly have foreseen how bad Alexis Sanchez would be when he signed him, because his decline has been extraordinary. I'd love to know what's going on there. Those above Mourinho, his employers seem to have no coherent plan of what direction the club should be going in. They're more interested in getting American automobile partners and Asian noodle partners and that. They're very good at that, but from the football thing aspect of things, they seem to have little or no interest. And there's no stability at the club. Everyone's bitching about each other, and there's leaks coming from all over the place from various quarters. But, you know, I'm not trying to defend Mourinho. I don't think he'll last there, but you can make arguments to support him. It can be done.
I think he's playing the long game, personally. I think he's trying to trash the United brand so hard that the Glazers can't get any American Automobile Association sponsorship money anymore, can't repay the debt, and then have to transfer the club into community ownership. And so that Mourinho comes back in 10 years as the honorary chairman, and everyone's like,
What he does, like Michael Knighton keepy ups on the pitch.
I mean, it's quite funny. I just clocked today. There's three clubs in the Premier League called United, Newcastle, Manchester, and West Ham, and they're probably the three most badly run, un-United clubs going.
Antonio Valencia has claimed after the game he's 100% behind the manager. He was criticised by Mourinho for not attending the Carabao Cup tie against Derby in his role as captain. He then liked an Instagram post calling for Mourinho to be sacked, describing the football under Portuguese coach as a punishment. He said he hadn't read what had been written. And actually, if you, in his defence, the Instagram account is called Team Valencia, and the picture was just three pictures of Antonio Valencia just standing with a football at his feet, not doing anything particularly impressive, but just being on the pitch with the ball. So you could sort of see, if Antonio's scrolling through, he might just like that one.
Made me think of Jeremy Corbyn and that mural. You know, I didn't see the detail of it.
If I ever see three pictures of myself on any social media channel, I just like it without reading any of the text.
Yeah, but you wouldn't retweet, would you? Because that's slightly self-indulgent, but you could like it.
Like
I'm sure
it,
if you can retweet an Instagram. But Newcastle United at home for United. Yes, Paul? Sorry.
Can I just ask about United and the way they play? Because you're right, I mean, it's different players doing things wrong on different days, but same effect. But has Mourinho's teams always been this slow? Like, so ponderous.
They can't have been in the Chelsea with sort of Robin and Duff.
That's not my memory. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Lukaku the other night, he looks like he's running in deep mud. And, Pogba reduced to gesticulating angrily at him because he wasn't making runs when Pogba was on the ball. There seems to be different people, like Paul says, underperforming every week, and it's like whack-a-mole. Once you sort out one area, someone else pops up and has a shocker.
I suppose if I wanted any footballer to do tough mudder with me, I mean, Lukaku's up there as someone. It's a good question, and you're right, I just can't remember what happened last week, but I do seem to think Chelsea's Mourinho.
Even the Hazard Costa version, that was, you know, quick on the counter and lethal, you know, it's like.
But maybe this side, if they were doing well. Oh, hang on, they came second last year and they were still boring.
Yeah,
they?
I mean, watch this game. It's the first game I've watched them properly this season. It just reminded me of the Sevilla knockout last year. Exactly the same style of performance.
Mm. I suppose that old Chelsea side were famously solid at the back. But then, up front they still had, you know, they used that base to go and do exciting things further forward. And United, well, Mourinho said after, it's part of the problem really, isn't it? Because after the game he said that they can't play out from the back, which... because the players aren't good enough to play out from the back, but they're sort of, half of them are his players anyway, and it's all kind of like, you kind of have to look for all the double meanings and everything that he says. So that's just a criticism of, it's been interpreted as a criticism of the transfer policy over the summer, which is, you know, you just start, when you start picking away at stuff like that, then you know you're in trouble, really.
Maybe Alexis Sanchez needs a pay rise.
We're big fans of nominative determinism on this show, and yes. Neto was in goal for Valencia, should be noted.
Thank you very much, Barry. Also in Group H, Juve 3, Young Boys 0, Paulo Dybala hat-trick. The first was a lovely cushioned left foot, side foot volley. Juventus got a perfect start, 9 consecutive wins in all competitions. Man United Juventus is next, and that'll do for part 1. In part 2, we'll begin with Manchester City's heroic win in Hoffenheim. Welcome to part 2 of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The one win of the Premier League sides was Manchester City's 2-1 win in Hoffenheim. Paul, I sat down to watch this game and just presumed City would stroll it. The goal was very early. Too early, I think. I mean, with this and the Real Madrid game, I don't like a first-minute goal. I'm not ready. I think...
Not even when it's against the odds of the favourite?
I think I wanted Hoffenheim to win, actually. I felt like I wanted them. I felt... You know that sick feeling you get when a team concedes the goal and you think... Oh, that's a real shame. When David Silva scored, I really felt for Hoffenheim. After 5 minutes, then I'm happy, I'm ready for the goals to start. But 43 seconds.
I think you're not allowed to feel sorry for Hoffenheim because they're an even more objectionable football team than Manchester City.
Oh, okay. Sorry, explain the for other ignorant types.
Oh, well, they sort of were just kind of this lowly village team that were bought 9 or 10 years ago by some rich guy and pumped loads of money in and got them promoted through the divisions. Now they're in the Champions League. I think in Germany they even give Bayern Munich and RB Leipzig run for their money in the lack of popularity stakes.
Yes, but I mean, like, if a really rich person came and bought Cambridge, I'd be happy about
it. Yeah, they don't think would about you? It in the same way in Germany, though.
Would I? Yes. Well, how do you want us to? How do you want us to get out of the relegation zone, League Two? You know,
we should go down.
We tried that. It wasn't much fun. Was City lucky in this game?
I really enjoyed watching this game. The football I watched this week, Man City's first half performance for me was the most exciting. Because they're playing at such pace. They were largely Hoffenheim gave them a game in the first half. In the second half, they sort of sat back and decided to go for the point, which seemed a sensible decision. But David Silva just gave this sort of, you know, mini Messi performance. Again, he was popping up all over the place, strong in the middle, beating people with dribbles, finding passes all over. I mean, a bit higher up the field, but finding passes. Sterling, I thought he had this one beautiful chance in the first half that the keeper sort of managed to save with his heel. Sterling stuck it through the keeper's legs and he saved it with his heel. And I just thought that was elite movement. The guy sort of was on the run from the halfway line, outsprints the defender, gets his body in front, takes it. It was the sort of thing that he wasn't quite doing for England in the World Cup. And I thought, oh, that's good. So the second half, Hoffenheim dug in. City were congested in and around the box, and it was that sort of thing where, like, well, yeah, they don't have a plan B here. It's plan A or nothing. But City do have enough players with that little bit of extra to make the difference. And Silva was that player on the day, and it was quite cute, really, that the way he scored his goal, it was excellent, but it was because of determination. He read there was a cross coming in. He read the defender might not be able to control it in the way that was going to allow him to get it immediately clear. He was right. Silva straight in on him, got the ball, second touch, on a tight angle, slots it far post past the keeper.
But the defender's got to clear that.
Well, yeah.
I know it's difficult, but he's got to... You just can't, in your own penalty area, bring the ball down if you don't know what's around.
Well, it was an odd height for him, yeah. Wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, he didn't do it well, but the great thing was that for me, was Silva sort of anticipated that he might not do it well and was like, I'm having that. I'm just going to rob it off you. And he did, and that was the difference in the match.
How did Leroy Sané not get a penalty, John?
It was in a week of extraordinary or odd refereeing decisions. That was certainly one of them. I genuinely don't know. It was one of those things you watched in real time and thought, that's a nailed-on penalty. Then when it's not given, you think, oh, the replay must show that first sight was slightly inaccurate and he's dived or something. But no, he just got completely cleaned out. So, yeah, it's a mystery.
It's not the best penalty that wasn't given this week. In League One, has anyone seen this? Andy Barcham is in the Bradford penalty area. A sort of a shirt pull. It's not really that heavy a foul. It just all happens 5 yards inside the penalty area. Like, all of it. There's no... Mm-hmm. He was going into the box. He's just in the box. And then the ref gives a free kick outside the box. And you can just see the player just shouting. It was there. It was... He's standing... He just... You know, sometimes players roll a little bit into the box to make it more... Or point at a divot that's on the edge. Oh, it was absolutely wonderful.
Well, if the penalty area was, say, a snooker table, he was nearer the middle pocket than he was the corner. Yeah. Down at the byline, and it was just absolutely extraordinary. And I'd love to know what the ref thought when he saw it later, as he surely must have, and how a linesman
I guess the lineup might have been on the lineup might have been on the other side.
Yeah.
But there's just no. I mean, he was in the 6 yard box almost. I mean, it's ludicrous. Anyway, back to City. Sergio Aguero scored in 5 consecutive away Champions League games.
He's only the second player to do that for an English club. Can you name the first?
Drogba?
No, Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Okay. It's quite a short quiz, Barry. Could have gone on a bit longer. Lyon 2, Shakhtar 2, also in this group. It was behind closed doors. Sounds weird. England have got that in Croatia in a week or so. But Shakhtar were 2 up, weren't they? And they threw it away in the last 20 minutes.
And it's behind closed doors, but they still allow UEFA delegates and corporate sponsors in.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you can have a behind closed doors prawn sandwich. Yeah. Do you reckon then they're allowed to drink, you know, in you have to have in a, when you're in a prawn sandwich box.
Bring in a bottle of Voddy.
You could. Yeah. Well, I mean, that, I would not wouldn't be my my drink of choice at a football match.
It's an odd phrase, isn't it? Because it suggests that in normal matches they leave all the doors open.
Anyway, Lyon still lead the group. City go to Shakhtar next. In Group G, CSKA Moscow 1, Real Madrid 0. Let's talk to Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
We've talked a lot about Messi, a little bit about Valencia. We might ask you about that at the end. But how big a surprise is this result for Real Madrid? And considering, I suppose, last year they lost to Spurs in the group stages and they still won the Champions League. So they're probably not fretting too much.
No, well, I mean, they're not fretting too much about this particular result, as you say, because last year showed that you can get through the group, even finishing second, you can get beaten and still win the competition. But I think it's more that this comes within the context of the previous two games. And so no, Real Madrid have now gone three games in a row without scoring. It's the first time this happened since they were managed by Fabio Capello in 2006-07 season, when genuinely they were abysmal. I mean, that season, they were a really appalling side that then went on to win the league title, which again shows you that weird things can happen. But I think that the concern, and because they're nowhere near as bad as that Capello side was, the concern is they're not being as efficient as they once were. This, of course, has re-raised that question of what you do without Cristiano Ronaldo, where you find the goals from with him not playing, because Madrid had loads and loads of chances. Admittedly, in truth, they weren't always incredibly clear chances. There was a post and there's a header just wide right at the end from Varane, but perhaps they didn't create the clarity of chances they would like. It was a lot of kind of crosses in from the side, a lot of shots from mid-distance. But there is concern about the fact that the high possession, the higher up the pitch that they're playing, the possibly, in fact, compared to last, you know, the better use of the ball, but they're not getting as clear chances as they were before. They're not taking as many shots. They're not being as efficient. And that has raised that question about, well, we thought that without Ronaldo, it didn't matter because against Roma, they were brilliant because Benzema had started scoring goals because, of course, Gareth Bale was taking a step up. We thought that everything was fine, but now maybe it doesn't look like that, in part because Benzema isn't taking on that number nine role or hasn't over the last three or four games, which he had done before that. Of course, Gareth Bale was injured. So yeah, there's quite a lot of concern, not because of the result, but because this is part of a pattern now of three games in a row.
Does that mean that in January they'll spend 200 million on a centre-forward?
No, I mean, to be honest with you, I suspect not. I mean, I wouldn't be hugely surprised if in January they did buy a centre-forward. But bear in mind that in a way, this is kind of what the signing of Mariano was. So throughout the summer, they resisted the idea of an extra striker. Julian Lopetegui, the manager, was saying, look, I need a number nine. I need someone who's slightly different. Mariano, who almost scored, had a couple of headers in Moscow. And then he was signed back from France. Of course, he'd been away for a year. But I don't see them spending a fortune on a striker in the winter, not least because it's not that easy to do. And it's not that easy to find a really good striker who's not already played in the Champions League and who doesn't cost you a huge premium for buying him midway through the season.
We should mention, you know, the sort of mad 8.5 minutes injury time at the end and Akinfeev getting sent off for sort of almost the... I don't know if that's the two quickest yellow cards I've ever seen in succession.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, they were so quick that at first, and I admit I was watching two games at once, so I wasn't sure if he'd already got one. At first, I assumed it was just one and the referee, for some reason, had kind of appeared to show it twice. And the two of them together, yeah, it was fairly crazy. I mean, the game was basically already over. So he effectively gave us, what was it, an extra 4 or 5 minutes for the sake of a man walking off, another man walking on, and him saying, OK, that'll do.
On Messi, I mean, are we just going on about how brilliant he was yesterday because it was in England and we were watching him? Was that just a sort of par for the course performance?
No, I mean, I think look, obviously, up to a point, there's an element of seeing Messi because you don't see him every week and seeing him play like that. I think, wow, this guy's amazing. And actually, one of the things that's been really striking about Messi, I mean, right from the very start, you know, we're talking all the way back beyond the decade. One of the things that's striking about him is how regularly he produces incredibly good performances, you know, and to the point where you know, the what's remarkable about him is how routine this has become, that we almost overlook it. And, you know, there's that old cliche, isn't there, that when someone from a third division club scores a great goal, the old cliche says, oh, imagine if Messi scored that, we'd be seeing it every day and talking about it every day. Well, in fact, I think Messi has turned that cliche on its head. Messi does good things so often that in a way you just go, yeah, Messi scored a great goal again, and it's all almost normal. But, big caveat alert, this was a really, really good performance, even from Messi's point of view. And I think, you know, you look back over Messi's career and you try and remember the games that really stand out. And in a way, that the fact there are so many of them almost blinds you to just how good he is, because it becomes a save routine. But I think that this was a really, really good performance, even from Messi's, you know, even by Messi's own standards.
And just finally, Valencia must be happy going to Old Trafford and getting a point.
Well, sort of. Unhappy in the sense that obviously this puts them in a difficult position in the group. When after two games you've only got a point, that's not great. But of course you go away to Old Trafford, it's Manchester United. And you know, never overestimate or underestimate rather the importance of clubs like Manchester United for Spanish football. You know, there is a real sense that this is a huge club. It's a properly great place to go, and to get a result there is enormous. And last year we saw that in the delirious response to Sevilla winning in Old Trafford. You know, there was a real sense that Sevilla had done something genuinely historic. But that's part of it. So in that sense, pretty happy. In the other sense, I suppose, the fact that they withstood, what was it, the last 15, 20 minutes when United put quite a lot of pressure on them, then they'd be happy about that as well. But I think there was also a sense that actually United were a team that they could go for. United were a team that were vulnerable. And the way the game played and the way it played out, I think there was a sense that certainly if you take the first half of the game, you think, well, Valencia should have come away there with a win. Not because they created a huge amount of clear chances, but because of the sense that they could get at United. And you know, my personal kind of perspective on it, rather than, if you like, the kind of the Valencian or the Spanish perspective, is that he had one of those weird performances from Gonzalo Guedes in particular, where he absolutely tore Manchester United apart in terms of getting into the area, getting beyond them. Every attack was down the left. Every attack, he seemed to find himself into a brilliant position. And then I'm not sure I saw him take the right decision once in the entire game. Now, he's occasionally wasteful, but he's very, very rarely as wasteful as he was the other night. And so I think there is a sense, from Valencia's point of view, of missed opportunity as well.
Sid, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Speak to you on Monday. Sid Lowe.
Cheers.
Out in Spain. Goodbye. Producer Sammy, they're ruthless with the goodbye. So half a cheerio from Sid. That's all you're getting. Elsewhere in the Champions League, 5-0. Roma beat Victoria Pilsen in Group G as well. Justin Kluivert got his first goal in the Champions League. 28 to go to eclipse his dad's European record. Edin Dzeko got a perfect hat-trick. In Germany, Bayern Munich drew 1-1 with Ajax. Ajax, I could have won this game, actually. Had a lot of chances. Also in Germany, it finished Dortmund 3, Monaco 0. Impressive performance from Dortmund. Jadon Sancho continued his impressive run of assists. Possibilities that he could be in the England squad, which I think is named today, I think.
That's right, because I think the Decimal wanted to send me up to St George's Park and I couldn't because I was going out to the pub tonight. But the,
that doesn't show great commitment to the Guardian.
No. And that's why I am where I am. but I think, yeah, I mean, we were, Danny Taylor and Don Fifield were writing that today that it'll be a call up for Maddison.
Okay.
Certainly in the squad.
I'd be pleased with that.
Yeah, and I think Sancho, I think he's going under 21s, actually. That's what I've read.
Okay. Hasn't he just signed a new deal as well with
Dortmund? With Dortmund, yeah, Dortmund. He has. And talked about how important it is to go abroad and how great a club they are and great bond with the supporters and stuff.
Did any thought of Sturridge into the England squad?
Well, I kind of saying to my Liverpool mate, surely Vardy's spot in the squad is there for the taking for him, no? But, I mean, he obviously, you must have talked at length about that goal on Monday, but he's not getting that many minutes. I think he came on in the 89th against Napoli. So he's maybe, you know, it's not the, quite the same as...
But it could, I mean, it could. In England terms, that could be perfect, couldn't it? Because... Harry Kane is always going to play, right? Mm-hmm. So you need a centre forward who's going
to... Yeah, I think if Sturridge has made that mental adjustment to being the reserve for Liverpool and he's willing to do it for England, that's a great result for everybody.
Just like to point out, if you can hear any trouser rubbing, I'm maybe the phantom breather, but Paul McInnes is definitely the sort of Vic and Bob trouser rubber.
Indeed.
Why do you think I'm doing that?
I don't know.
Do you think I'm getting some sort of...
Are you nervous?
Maybe an erotic thing by proxy.
Possible.
So I'm not stimulating my genitals directly, but maybe
There's no need to take it down to that level. Whatever gets you through the pod, anyway. Schalke made a hat-trick of German victories. They beat Lokomotiv Moscow 1-0. 20-year-old American Weston McKinney scored a late header from a corner. Elsewhere, Atletico continued their 100% start with a 3-1 win over Bruges. Antoine Griezmann scored twice. Finally, both Portuguese sides got victories. Benfica avoided a ninth straight Champions League defeat by beating AEK Athens 3-2 away in Greece, and Porto beat Galatasaray 1-0 at home. JCT says, what vegetable would you like me to throw at you at the live show in at the Emmanuel Centre? 29th of November, me, you, Barry Wilson, one other TBC. Obviously, the vegetable reference is to do with Steve Bruce. Paul said, if Villa hadn't sacked Bruce, what vegetable is the next step up in escalating, showing your displeasure? And where was the security check-in letting the cabbage in, as it can't have been a snack? can we at the same time obviously say it, you shouldn't throw things at managers, and it is very disrespectful to Steve Bruce, who actually did a pretty good job in Aston Villa, especially through very trying times last year personally for him, and at the same time find it funny that someone had a cabbage thrown at them?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's how I feel about the situation. Yeah.
I don't know if it was a coin or a lighter, you know, which fans are allowed to bring into grounds, we'd be tutting, and you know, because getting hit with either is very painful. But yeah, there's something funny about a cabbage. I remember Danny Baker ranting on 6 or 6 years ago because everyone was getting very sanctimonious about a referee or a linesman at the Den being hit by a half-eaten pie. And, you know, it was being described as a missile. And Danny Baker was going, no, it's not a missile. It's a half-eaten pie. A coin is a missile. A lighter is a missile. A bottle is a missile. A half-eaten pie is, you know, not quite consumed food.
Do you know what kind of cabbage it was?
I haven't seen it, because a red cabbage can be quite tough.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't
it? Yeah, but it Savoy, like you've probably got a nice bit
no,
of
no, it was a proper
that.
Solid white cabbage.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Yeah.
In which case,
that's ironically, another name
that's like
for
a bowling
that
ball.
is a cannonball. But one photographer from the Birmingham Mail who was on hand to witness it said it was an old man who took it out of a white bag and threw it. And this was before the game even started, and shouted, this is what you've reduced us to. And you kind of go, no, this is what you've reduced you to. you sat at home and decided, what am I going to do to voice my dissatisfaction with what's going on with Villa? We've only won one game in 10, and surveying, you know, potential weapons and deciding, yeah, cabbage, that's the one to go for. But the guy, the photographer, said, you know, it was the weight of a house brick. And you're going, yes, and for people who've never seen a house brick, it was also the weight of a cabbage. So, yeah, it's kind of funny, but also incredibly disrespectful. But I think Bruce was a dead man walking anyway, so...
Dan says, after Steve Bruce's sacking, my question is, how many detective novels can he now write between now and his next job? FYI, my mum's dog is called Steve Bruce, and she hates football. That's a good name for a dog. Look, was he unlucky? That game was ridiculous against Preston. I think it was an utterly ludicrous game with penalties and sending offs and an injury time equaliser, the chance for Villa to win it. You wonder if... Who took the penalty?
Glenn Whelan.
Glenn Whelan, that's it. Not a classic penalty taker, but I think all of... Aston Villa's penalty takers were off the pitch at the time. If he scores that penalty, they win. Perhaps he doesn't lose his job. It makes it seem ridiculous that they sack him after that. Or do you think it's fair enough?
Yeah, the cabbage kind of set the tone for a slightly bonkers night, really. And they were 2-0 up, Villa, and then reduced to 10 men on a very dubious sending off for James Chester when he conceded the penalty, which was 50-50 at best. And then, obviously, they had the chance to win it 4-3 in injury time. But I think, given the way things have sort of been going for Villa this season, it felt like he was on borrowed time anyway, and that if they had... You know, it could have just been a routine 2-0 win, if not for that refereeing decision. But it would have still been sort of papering over the cracks, I think.
Rumours, because of George Mendes' links with Aston Villa, that they could target Paulo Fonseca at Shakhtar.
I've not heard that one. Thierry Henry is the big tip this morning, just because he was, you know, in line apparently in the summer. Although he's now at Bordeaux or somewhere, isn't he? Sorry, Sammy, this is nonsense.
No, I don't think he took that.
Did he not go there in the end?
No.
The Brentford manager, Dean Smith, has also been mentioned. John Terry, one I've also heard, which I think would be a super appointment for both parties, is Rafael Benitez. But, I think they're hoping to have someone in place by the end of the next international break. But Bruce is probably better off out of there, you know, because he was being undermined during the summer with the regime change. The fans didn't like him. They didn't like his style of play. He would argue that he got them to the playoff final last season and that was good, which it was, but they were very poor in that playoff final. They only lost 1-0, but they were very much second best. It was a poor performance. And, yeah, I think the fans are bored with him. But, you know, Ipswich fans were bored with Mick McCarthy last season. They got rid of him. Some of them abused him relentlessly. They even abused him after he'd resigned and was just in caretaker charge of his own job, if you know what I mean, and got relentlessly abused by a section of Ipswich fans. And they got what they wanted. He left the club, and now Ipswich are rubbish, and it amuses me greatly.
Lewis says, as a Norwich fan, I very much enjoyed Barry's Tuesday night tweets. Any chance he could go into a bit more detail about how funny it would be if Ipswich got relegated? Well, there you are. You've just got your wish, Lewis. Tyler Roberts' strike gave Leeds a win at Hull in the Yorkshire Derby, which means they return to the top of the table. Middlesbrough up to second with their win at Ipswich. West Brom dropped from first to fourth after a 2-2 draw with Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield United climbed to third after Billy Sharp. Well, he must be about 92, Billy Sharp. Scored a brace in a 2-0 win at Blackburn. 1 point separating the top four sides. In League One, Pompey are now 3 points clear at the top after an away win at Coventry. Scunthorpe and Charlton played a belter, 5-3 to Scunny in the end. In League Two, leaders Lincoln lost away to Tranmere, meaning Exeter are now within 2 points after their win at home against Stevenage. Cambridge were unfortunate to concede 3 at home to the UN Peace Envoys of Forest Green. They are now second bottom. It was funny until about now. I looked at the table. I was like, I can't believe we're there now. Oh dear, I'm a bit worried. Adam says, did anyone actually notice there was a Carabao Cup match on Tuesday night? Be honest.
I saw that Carabao Cup was on our order of business for today, and went, nah, there was no Carabao Cup, and didn't even bring the box up. So that's it. Completely passed me by.
Anyway, Southampton beat Everton on penalties.
It was notable for the only bit that I've seen of it was the pretty hilarious Richarlison penalty miss.
Yeah, it was a Jar Jar one, wasn't it?
Yeah, he sort of it was almost like the sort of full sort of slow Pogba-esque kind of like running on the spot approach, and then just bluting it yards over the bar. It was fantastic.
All right, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll look ahead to the Europa League and the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Europa League tonight, for the few of you who listen between it being uploaded at 5 and the game starting at 7 or whenever. Ruben Loftus-Cheek might start for Chelsea against the Hungarian champions Vidi at Stamford Bridge. Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers says he wants his side to be clinical in their game against Salzburg, as opposed to how he wants his side to be in other games. They both won their opening games. In Fitbar News, Brendan Rodgers very critical after their League Cup semi-final against Hearts was moved to Murrayfield.
It's absolutely farcical. I mean, the powers that be said there was no other alternative, and now they've come up with an alternative. Presumably, fans of teams have already made travel arrangements, paid for stuff, booked whatever, and now they have to make new ones. It's just ridiculous that any governing body could be that. Well, I suppose it isn't. They're all bloody incompetent, aren't they? But
I mean, look at the actual government. Right? But anyway, look, Rangers are at home to Rapid Vienna. Aubameyang and Ramsey are going to miss the Arsenal game against Karabag. And Mkhitaryan is not included in the squad because he's from Armenia and Armenians aren't welcome in Azerbaijan, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he's been told a couple of times that he would be safe and he would get the visa for it's over a contested region of Nagorno-Karabakh, but for personal political reasons, he doesn't want to travel.
He's not travelled before when he was at Dortmund, yeah. 2015. They were playing Azerbaijan Premier League side Gabala. The finals in Baku which is the capital of Azerbaijan. So if Arsenal make it,
I reckon he'd be all right.
Okay, not because he'll be safe when Arsenal make it.
Because no, I just don't think they'll make the final.
Premier League games, the big one, Liverpool City on Sunday. Who's going to win that one, John Ashdown?
Somebody. I think City will probably, given that Liverpool have had a slightly flat week, that looming in the end of it isn't great for them. There's not been a... I did a bit of research. There's not been a 0-0 in 21 games between City and Liverpool. The last time there was a 0-0...
Oh, you've gone and done it now, haven't you, Patrick?
Alberto Aquilani came off the bench for Liverpool in that 0-0.
I thought he looked quite good, Aquilani. It's one of those where I can see the potential there. There's no way this could be 0-0. I don't want to hammer it home, Barry, but look at... I mean, the players in both those sides.
I agree. I'm really looking forward to the game. I mean, if Liverpool play anywhere like they did against Napoli, they will lose heavily, you'd imagine. I think City will beat them in the interests of having an exciting title race. I would quite like City to lose, but in the interests of being proved right in my theory that City will win the Premier League by 12 or 15 points, I hope they do win.
What a conflict you have.
I'm torn.
I mean, the good thing is that Liverpool take the game to City when they play them, and they're...
And it's Anfield.
Maybe Klopp has this thing over Pep. I mean, the results would suggest so in their histories.
And you know, what the other flip side of the Man City performance in midweek was something that's, you know, been a bit of a theme, is that, you know, they don't look particularly solid defensively. There's big spaces out there that if the opening goal was like two passes and in, Liverpool are capable of playing that kind of football. I'd be more inclined to go for a home win, I think. But maybe a score draw would suit both teams.
I mean, City will score the obligatory goal where Leroy Sané pulls back from the byline and someone slots it home from 2 yards. So it will they score any more on top of that? And can Liverpool respond accordingly?
Manchester United Newcastle is an interesting game because, I mean, both sides are in crisis, and if Newcastle win at Old Trafford, the crisis at Old Trafford will be so enormous. I mean, obviously it'd be boring to talk about it, but also be quite entertaining to happen. Having said that, of all the teams that Manchester United have got to play, you'd think Newcastle would be the dream, them or Cardiff or Huddersfield, I guess. But Rafa will set up defensively. Rafa had dinner with Mike Ashley. Will he set up defence? Well, maybe you're right.
He has been quite defensive in his approach to games so far this season, but he must have clocked how ponderous Manchester United have been, how poor they've been at home. And they have been poor in pretty much every game they've played at home, even against Leicester, who they beat. I think if Newcastle went for this, they'd have a very good chance of winning it.
They don't have enough going forward, do they? I mean, you know, I think they're forced to play Kennedy at left back at the weekend. I don't know what the injury situation is going to be, but, you know, Rondon hasn't got started yet. They've still got Joselu up front, who's, you know, you can't put your house on him at all. So, yeah, I can see, you know, no other possibility than Newcastle trying to go for the 0-0 and maybe getting it.
Mike Ashley and Rafa had dinner last night, and I believe they were clear the air talks as well. I'm not sure if the squad were there too. There's video footage of Ashley leaving, going into the restaurant where it was $5.95 happy hour dinner if you ordered before 6:45 p.m.
I'd say any meal you're eating with Ashley is an unhappy hour.
And apparently in the video of him walking out, he flicked the V's to the fans. I'm not sure that's true. They weren't singing songs of love to him in return.
I can sort of see his pockets being stuffed with little tomato sauce sachets as well. He seems like that kind of bloke who might, yeah.
He'd take a Nutella from a breakfast buffet.
Absolutely,
is that what
yeah.
you're saying? So anyway, we'll find out what happened there. And wonder what they had for dinner. I mean, I presume it was just like a huge tray.
Well, my understanding was he was taking them out for pizza, so I would speculate pizza.
Can you have Donna meat on a pizza?
Probably.
Yeah, probably can.
So. Oh, you sounded like... Yeah, that's my kind of pizza.
Couple of interesting mid-table games, huh?
Yeah, talk me through them.
Well, Leicester City, Everton. You look at the table as it's sort of shaping up now. You've got Watford, Bournemouth, Leicester and Wolves, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then Everton coming at 11. Watford are playing Bournemouth at Vicarage Road and Leicester are playing Everton. So I think it'd be interesting to see where these sides are relatively. Obviously, Leicester have started to tick over and grind out results. Watford had an excellent start, but Bournemouth, another 3 points on Monday night against Palace. I'm going to see Crystal Palace versus Wolves, which I think will be a very interesting game because, you know, Roy knows how to set up a team and they'll be ready for Wolves, but Wolves are look a formidable proposition.
And will, I don't know, Harry Arter be licking his lips as he's seen how Messi carved Spurs apart on Wednesday night and think he can do the same for Cardiff?
I think that's going to be... I was offered the Spurs game or the Palace game and I chose the Palace game because I think it'll be quite a routine.
Just so much power you've got. Do you want to go to St George's Park? Nah. Going to the pub. Do you want to go to this game? Nah. Sunday, Fulham Arsenal's midday, Southampton Chelsea 2:15. So it's a sort of just sit in your underpants and watch telly all day, isn't it? Here's a...
You will be at home, will you?
I'll be at work with you, won't I?
Yeah
but don't worry. I'd rather
you got dressed.
I'll be dressed until the 4 o'clock game.
Okay.
Rob asks, what's a thrashing? I heard someone on the wireless say 3-0 was a thrashing, but I'd say it has to be a 4-goal difference. 1-0, 2 is a tight win. 2-0, comfortable win. 3-0. See, I would say 4-1 is a thrashing, but 3-0, not a thrashing.
3-0, not a thrashing.
Not
no.
a thrashing, okay.
Good. A heavy beating.
But you can have a 0-0 thrashing, can't you?
Not really. No.
People do use the phrase.
Well, they shouldn't.
It's like saying, if it was on points.
Yeah. That's everything that's wrong with football. Simon says, which Premier League manager would you most of all like to see step in for Max for a week?
Don't think Eddie Howe would be lovely to watch.
Eddie Howe was sort of the guy that sprang to mind. I'm not sure
he'd make the headlines though, would it?
I don't think he'd be, it pains me to say it, up to the job.
Klopp would be good, come on. Cliche, yeah. Maybe, but you want Klopp or Jose for different reasons.
Well, you see, if he's hosting, hosting's a different beast to just being a guest.
Yeah, you're right. Liam says, how was the sensation of being able to hear completely after having the ear syringed? Like ears popping after a flight. No, way better than that. And it wasn't a syringe, it was like a Hoover. On Monday, Barry offered to syringe my ears because he had experience of syringing dog's ears. But I went to a professional and a beady-eyed American man put a Hoover, tiny Hoover, in my left ear. And it was one of the best 3 minutes of my entire life.
Because when I had it done, I had it like a water cannon.
No, they don't do that anymore. Oh. Well, certainly this guy didn't. They did charge me £80 for 2 minutes.
Ah, yeah, I got it on the old NH.
Renoir. Oh, I don't know how you pronounce your name. Renoir's got in touch. I don't know any other painters, artists who want to. Monet sent us a message. Renoir says, a highlight for me is when Max says the team name Guingamp. It's always said with such gusto and different every time. Perhaps your French roundup could be from a poissonnière in Guingamp, so we can delight in you saying the word Guingamp. Hashtag Guingamp. Danny says, long-time listener, first-time caller, Tykes fan, how do you not realise the Phantom Breather is you? It was confirmed a while ago when you were in a studio alone doing the World Cup previews without Barry, with everyone else calling in. P.S. I like the breathing. It keeps things amateur. Thanks, Danny. Still think it might be Barry, but... can you do? And that'll do for today. Thank you, Paul McInnes.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Ashdown.
Cheers.
I'll never see you again. Cheers, Baz.
Yeah, I'll
definitely see you again. Anyway, we'll be back on Monday. Let's move on to Group G. Real Madrid beaten in Moscow. And we could talk to Sid Lowe. Sid, hello. Let's ring Sid.
El contestador Vodafone del 6-3.
Sometimes try him a couple of times and it just goes through. If not, we can... Do we need Sid? It's quite a long pod anyway,
isn't it? Necessarily. I only discovered Real Madrid lost about 10 minutes before I came upstairs. That completely passed me by. So I can't really... Don't have much to say about it. Did Ronaldo play?
He plays for Juve.
Oh, Jesus.
Hello.
Hey, Sid, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
Oh, you've just missed an absolute bit of gold there. we were saying if we couldn't get through, we were like, "Ah, oh, do we need Sid today?" And Barry was like, oh, "Well, actually, I didn't even know that Real Madrid lost until 10 minutes ago." And then he looked at me and went, "Did Ronaldo play?"
Finger on the pulse, Lee.
It's good. It's good to see you need me for the, you know, for the really minute details.
That's the insight we need. All right, are we rolling, Sammy?
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.